comes back down to prioritizing. So for me, if that happens, I can find myself getting really overwhelmed. And what then I have to do is go back to what is the priority. Hence why I talk about a must-do list, right? What is the priority? What is it that I need to be doing? And then I go back to focus on that and that alone, which enables me to progress and move forward.
Hi, I'm Oliver Berquez, co-founder of 4D Fit. Welcome to the Brain, Brawn and Business Podcast. The podcast is to get successful people on, just to talk about what inspires them, what motivates them, the successes and the challenges they faced in business, how they've overcome them, what they've learned along the way. It's a really practical podcast trying to offer real value to the listeners and things you can implement on a daily basis, things around business and strategy and habits, lifestyle, performance. Hi everyone, today's episode is with Will Polston from Make It Happen, and it's a really, really good episode. It's just over an hour long, but loads of take-home points in there. Will delves into quite a few areas, his approach to sort of goal setting, the importance of a morning routine, how he sets himself up for the day, how he has a strategy around sort of tasks and scheduling, the impact of gratitude, how he uses fitness to help his performance and his well-being. He prioritizes his time very effectively and some strategies around that as well. And the importance of positivity. And I think what's really humbling and the compassion he shows around he's had challenges, he's had struggles, how he's overcome them and how he's used all of that to be able to serve his clients better and to be the best version of himself. So, Will's a great guy. He's very knowledgeable, highly motivated, and his journey and the self-development he's done over the years is very inspiring. And I'm sure once you listen to the episode, you'll be inspired and get lots from it. So, yeah, episode coming up now. As always, I'd love to hear from you what you enjoyed. So drop me a message. Yes, podcast community, welcome back to another episode. I'm really excited with my guest today, Will Polston. Will, thanks so much for coming on, mate.
It's a pleasure.
I'll give you a little bit of background on Will, because I think what's really exciting, Will, is the mindset and your approach and what you're doing to share with the world is really important. I think it's going to be real value today's podcast.
Cool.
So, obviously, Will's company Make It Happen, and it'd be good to find out more about what Make It Happen does and stuff like that. When we spoke yesterday, it was like, so obviously you're a mindset strategist, which is the big thing you do. But obviously you want to empower 1 billion lives.
Yeah, that's the mission.
Yes,
that's the
mate.
Mission.
And I love that. I love that, because that's just from how I'm reading that is like, look, I can help people and I want to help as many people as possible. And I think that's such a good place to come from. So yeah, that's that. I know you've been involved, for Will, for anyone who wants to know, you've been involved in lots of businesses and you've obviously learned so much stuff along the way, and that's obviously going to be valuable. So yeah, that's Will. Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolute pleasure.
Will, is there anything else you want to add to sort of that very brief introduction?
No, I just guess I want to say thank you for inviting me on. It's great. Hopefully, for those of you that are watching or those of you that are listening, there's some nuggets you can take away from this. And
perfect.
If there are anything I say that you want to ask me about, then I'm sure we'll share it towards the end. But you can reach out to me on various platforms.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's cool. And what I do, Will, at the end, always, yeah, be good to hear what the events you've got coming up. I'm sure people will, at the end of this, who don't know you, will want to connect and find out more. So we'll add that in. I'll also add it into the notes.
Yeah, cool.
So that's cool. What's your first job after college or uni?
I didn't go to college. Well, in fact, I did go to college. I quit college on day one. It's an interesting story. I didn't go to uni. My first job, actually, are we talking first proper job?
Yeah, so right, so quit college day one. That's an interesting one. We'll go on back to that. First job.
Yeah, so
my
first proper job.
Strip that back. So quit day one at college.
Yeah.
Because I think it's good content. Why happened day one at college? Because it's going to lead you to somewhere.
Yeah, sure. I might as well get to the background of the story now really quickly. So I grew up with a belief that money equals happiness. Dad used to work incredibly hard, left the house at 5 o'clock in the morning, got home at 7, 8 o'clock at night, and worked very, very hard working in London in IT. And when he used to come home, he was very stressed. And I don't know if you've ever experienced people that have got sort of just a tension. You haven't necessarily done anything, but you can feel that tension because they've got that. And that was my dad. Now, I've got a slightly unique family situation. One of my uncles is a billionaire. One of my other uncles is a multi-millionaire. And my dad always used to say, they just got lucky. Yeah, they just got lucky. And one day he quit his job, set up a business with one of my uncles. That business never ended up getting going, and my dad ended up becoming massively depressed, and to the point where he slept in a separate room. He wouldn't leave the room, slept in bed all day, curtains shut, very stereotypical of people that have feelings of depression. And after a while, I started to resent him because life for me changed as I knew it. I was like 11 years old at the time. Mum was sort of a housewife and looked after me and my other three brothers and sisters. Then she went out and worked multiple jobs and just wasn't there for it wasn't even for me, it was actually for my baby sister at the time. She was one or two, but she couldn't be there for her. And I just felt, a sadness for her, and I suppose for me indirectly. But so then for me, it was obvious at that age, well, money equals happiness. As Uncle Mark, billionaire, Uncle Steve, multi-millionaire, Dad, when he worked in London, he was a lot happier than he is now. Well, money was happiness. So I become that guy buying and selling and doing whatever I could at school to make a few quid, doing multiple paper rounds, like I say, buying and selling. And then a friend of mine, their parents actually bought a sort of a hotel that had a bar and stuff in it. And he was a couple of years older than me. And one day they were short of pot boys and said, "Will, can you do it?" And I said, "Yeah," and I did it. And I was, and at the end of the night, I remember they said, "Wow, you're like the best pot boy we've ever had." I've always had a really good work ethic. I was.
This is straight while I'm writing this down, and we'll come on to lessons learned. And I'm sorry to cut across you. But the work ethic standing out.
Oh, massively. Massively. I mean, I remember. Whether it was paper rounds, whatever, I would set up a production line to put the leaflet. Because when I used to have my paper round, you'd open the paper and then you had to put leaflets in the paper, and you were paid extra for putting leaflets in the paper. And I had a production line in my dining room of doing all
this. So work ethic, and you're thinking already.
Right, exactly, you're already thinking stuff.
So you're doing lots of jobs.
I was doing that, and then I got to know that, like, wow, you're great. But we know you're not 16. Because my friend was a couple of years old, and they said, "Oh, he's not 16 yet." They're like, "When are you 16?" I was like, "A year and 3 months." And they're like, "What, you're 14 years old? We've just had you working in this bar, and you're 14 years old. It's all like 1 o'clock in the morning." I was like, "Yeah." And they were like, "Well, you're that good. Like, just don't tell anyone, and we'll keep you working." And I become like head pot boy by the time I was 15. And it was great. I was earning money. So that was my first job. Then next proper job was, I was a Saturday boy at a clothes shop in Chelmsford. And then that actually evolved into becoming my first proper job, where I work full time as well.
So a couple of things I want to ask, because this is really interesting. Your uncles, at what age were you when you realised?
About then.
Right.
Yeah.
I was gonna say.
About then. There was a few little things. I remember, like, these are a really vivid memory. So one of my uncles picked up, and I'm a bit of a geek. In the respect of, I say I'm a bit of a geek. Geek's probably not the right word. I'm definitely a bit of a geek, but I really like Whitney Houston. Yeah, I really like Whitney Houston, and particularly the Whitney Houston Greatest Hits album, which is a couple of decades old now. But I really, really like it, and I got a really vivid memory on this beautiful sunny day where my uncle picked us up in one of his convertibles, and my sister was in the car, and I was in the car, and we had Whitney Houston blaring out, and it was just a really empowering moment. Felt amazing, and it's moments like that, memories like that, which are sort of catalysts. That was one of the moments, and sort of other moments I remember. I was probably a little bit younger, actually. So my uncle Mark, what really catapulted his success, if you like, is he created a program called Eco Challenge in America, which was massive. It was the first ever form of reality TV. Eco Challenge is sort of like Iron Man on steroids. It was the toughest fitness survival program at the time in the world, and it was all videoed. And I remember us all sitting round my other uncle's house, and he'd come over from America, and we were all watching it and seeing him on TV, and I mean, like, oh my God, he's on, because at the time, like now, we look at screens and we see people we know on screens all the time, but back then you didn't, you know, it was on TV.
I agree.
And now, and I remember like, oh my God, there's Uncle Martin, there he is on TV, and like, it was his program.
Yeah, so yeah, I've so got cool.
Those memories, yeah.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, like, so this is, because the reason it's great actually, although I ask, say, after college, uni, first job, but there's always a bit of history behind that. So childhood can shape us, you know. I think we can certainly shapes us something. I know that there, where there's DNA, there's certainly, you know, we're born certain, we're wired a certain way, but there's also environment shapes us as well. But something that stands out to me is there's obviously some entrepreneurial business wire in you, because you're buying and selling at a young age. So the transactional side of that, which is business, you're learning really well at a young age. You've got this work ethic that you've developed, which is probably just in you, which I find really fascinating, which they're coming, that's why you've been successful over the years, it's carrying you through.
Yeah, I don't think, so it's interesting, so I don't think people are wired with entrepreneurial DNA. I don't think that's the case.
But where did your buying and, so you think from pain?
100%. We only have two drivers. We have a driver to move away from pain, and we have a driver to move towards pleasure. But our driver to move away from pain is stronger than our drive to move towards pleasure.
Get that? I do. I get 100%. I get it. Yeah, you know, you're emotional and creatures, so pain or pleasure,
so,
definitely.
And so for me, so there's the pain and the pleasure, but for me, it was the association. As well, so I obviously for me, because of the association, I explained the moment in the convertible, the moment in the with Market TV and stuff. So for me, I created a neuro association of, well, they have got XYZ success, whatever you want to label it as, and they're in business, and he's in business, and he's in business. And the way that we create a belief is that this table here, right, it's got four legs, and the tabletop, if you like, is the belief, and the legs are the references. So the more references you have, the stronger that belief will be. And because I had lots of references of people that had success, happiness, money, and they were business owners, that's what created that belief so strongly for me.
Okay, great. So moving on from that, and we're jumping a little bit,
I
think it's relevant now. You said money was your driver, okay, yeah. Initially. That's not so, now knowing you, that's not so much now, is your driver. Where did the, right, when did that change? Okay, why did the shift question. Change? Where did that change in you?
I call it my lightning moment. So what happened for me was, like I say, so I was working, and again, like money was a massive driver for me. So I was working in this particular clothes shop in town, and then one of the aspirations was I wanted to own my own clothes shop and be like this particular guy. Obviously, there's a lot of local people listening here, I'm sure, local in Swiss. So I worked in a clothes shop called Zaga at the time. It was the only independent clothes shop outside of a city in the world that sold Gucci, Prada, Dolce & Gabbana, Etro, yeah. All in the same world. So I was around a lot of affluent people.
Did that inspire you, or did it go the other way? Because sometimes...
No, it inspired me.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Because this is interesting as well. When you're around these people, it can either put you in your shell or it inspires you to go to that place.
So yeah, it definitely inspired me, yeah. And then what happened was there was another local guy called Neil Bounds who set up a business and with another local business owner called Craig Hubert at a shop called Moda. And Neil was like a legend in the industry, in the rag trade industry. And the shop failed. And I thought to myself, I was 17 years old, I was like, oh my God, if Neil can't do it, I'm never going to be able to do it. I need to do something different. And the main clientele in Zaga were basically the majority of the time were professional footballers, property developers, stockbrokers, and drug dealers. I was like, I just want to become one of them. Right? Now, I've played rugby since I was 4 years old, and if you know most rugby players, they're great at rugby, but they're terrible at football. And I'm definitely terrible at football. So I was like, that ruled that out. I didn't have the money to become a property developer, so that ruled that out. So I was left with two options. I become a drug dealer or I go into investment sales. And to my mother's delight, I didn't choose the drug dealer option. So yeah, so I did that. And then that was kind of the catalyst. And then I got into investment sales, and I was commission only at 18 years old. And I stumbled across a book called The Secret, which you may or may not have heard, by a woman called Rhonda Byrne.
It's
about the law of attraction. Yeah, it's still pretty much my number one go to for anyone reading. The Secret by Rhonda Byrne, Bryne, I think.
I'll put these in the notes anyway.
But... And so I did that. And then that sent me off sort of on a tangent to go and do what I wanted to do. And basically what I did was, the more personal development I did, the more money I earned. Because when I read The Secret, I was like, well, all the things I've achieved in life today, I've done this, but I've just done it unconsciously. Now if I do it consciously, I'll get more. So I did more and more and more personal development. And again, financially, I was successful at a young age. And the reason why, for those of you that are listening, I sort of do it in inverted commas, is because success is subjective, right? So yeah, that's that.
But so you said you come from a place of pain. 18, are you still in, is it coming from a place of pain now? Or like, because where are you, no, and where are you getting your self-development from? Like, what's
the great question. Pain gets you going, pleasure keeps you going, right? So pain gets you into action, but then once you get the pleasure, then you get associated with the pleasures, and then you keep going from the pleasures. Sometimes this can be a subconscious pain thought process that's driving people, and that's one of the things that I work with my clients, is to enable them to use those forces to serve them. Because otherwise, if you live moving away from pain, then you're living in a place of fear rather than living in a place of abundance. And a lot of the law of attraction is introducing that side of things. So that what brought me into it was that other people that were successful were using it. So other people that were sort of where I aspired to be were reading this stuff. So I thought, right, I want to be like them. And my sort of blueprint to success has always been, find people that are better than me, or I perceive to be better than me, learn what they're doing, take all their best, mix it with a blend of my own personality, and I'll be better. That's really what it's about. So I've done those things, and I learned those things, and I did more and more and more. And then I went to an event with a guy called Tony Robbins, 2013, 4-day seminar, and I went along to it, and we got 3 days in. Again, at the time, money equals happiness, and I had my lightning moment. It just hit me, and I cried my eyes out for about 15 minutes. My mate standing next to me must have thought, what the hell's going on with you? But that happened because in that moment, I realized that for 10 plus years, my belief that money equals happiness wasn't the real driver. The real driver behind that was my dad and that whole situation. So everything I explained at the beginning of the show here was to do with my dad, I only become aware of in that moment. I was completely unconscious to it up until that moment. And it just made so much sense. And I actually vowed in that moment that the feeling of relief. It wasn't so much relief. It was more like, I don't know, like I can't even to today describe it. It was just this most powerful, like heart opening.
Was it things, because Tony Robbins, I think, is really inspirational, and he's probably the first person that really catapulted publicly this life coaching, this mindset, and the way it is. So I think he's fantastic, you know, his stuff. Was it things he was saying? What was
his story? So if
but this is why story is so important. And like, because people see you now as switched on mindset, caring will, like you are, but there's been a journey, a story to get there. And you just released saying this, I think the vulnerability you're showing actually makes you even more, your journey even better and more endearing. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
So it does. So
it was the Thanksgiving story, and it was like, it was mad, right? To the point where when we listen to, we actually only tend to listen to people for 7 seconds. Yeah, we listen to people for 7 seconds, and that's at the height. Because once we get 7 seconds into a story, we then start communicating internally of what we're hearing. And you can YouTube Tony Robbins' Thanksgiving story. And he talks about the Thanksgiving story, which was part of what the drive. Well, it wasn't part. It was the drive for him to go and do what it was that he does today. And basically, he talks about he had a dad that made loads of excuses, and there's a particular thing, I won't go into the whole story now, about what happened at Thanksgiving with a stranger at the door, and his dad said something along the lines of, we don't accept charity from strangers, or we don't accept charity. And what I heard was my dad saying, they just got lucky. Yeah, it was the excuse. So basically, it was an excuse, to the point where then that gave Tony, that episode gave Tony the drive to go on and become, which is now arguably the world's biggest, most respected life coach. And I said in that moment, I was like, oh my God, mine and Tony's story is so similar. What he's just done for me, I want to be able to do for other people. And I set a goal then that I'm going to become the world's best life coach. Now, ironically, years later, I decided that wasn't my goal. That isn't my goal now, because if I say I want to become the world's best life coach, it's about me, and that's not what it's about. What I want to do now is I want to empower 1 billion people. It's something I refer to as my North Star. I'm not naive enough to think that I'm going to work with a billion people one-on-one, or even maybe even one-to-many, but I talk a lot about the ripple effect, and what I empower people to do is become the best version of them. Because if they become the best version of them, they can benefit their family, their friends, their community, society, humanity, and that's...
Yeah, it's huge, mate. Absolutely huge. And I think, like, you know, hearing you talk and saying that that journey along the way... So, what I suppose the next question I want to lead into is, all of the learning lessons that you've done, getting to the point now, it must hold you in such good stead. So if anyone's listening thinking, when they go through some tough times, if they can just draw into that, learn from those tough times, that you'll get through that and you'll become better for it. Is that what you found you've done? Is that how you get into your place now, that you've just been able to learn from those lessons? And it's...
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with such a broad spectrum of people, from celebrities, professional athletes, business owners, right through to those that are about to commit suicide and everything in between. And the thing that is the common denominator of all of them that have achieved any level of success, however you define success, is that the most challenging times are what are the catalyst for them to achieve great things. From struggle comes strength. And if you look at anyone,
you just keep going.
Yeah, right. And if people, I'm a massive believer that life happens for you, not to you. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have tough times. I've just gone through a situation this last year that has been without a doubt the toughest time that I've ever gone through. Now, just because I'm the mindset guy, and I've had to have these conversations with myself, is that it doesn't mean that I don't have tough times. For me, it's an opportunity for me to apply everything that I know.
Does that make Will Polston better for his clients, that you have those tough times and service them? Because you're a mindset strategist because of that.
I went off and studied academically. Tony... Well, certainly was the original foundation of everything that he taught, something called neuro-linguistic programming. I'm a neuro-linguistic programming master practitioner. I'm an accredited master coach. I'm a member of the International Coach Federation. Like, all this stuff, which have essentially given me tools to help my clients and help myself, ultimately. But the lessons that I've had definitely can make it more relatable, I believe, because I can empathize with people. You know, there's lots of people that know the theory, but when you've been there and you've done it, there is a different level of empathy, I believe.
I 100% agree. So look, a couple of things. Mentors, you've said, you know, surround people that you want to aspire to be, that you see.
Yep.
So mentors sound like it's hugely important to you.
Yep.
So if you've got any personal heroes you've got, why you hold them in high regard, any mentors around you can share, because people listening to this, to have mentors and people on, hey, even like, because I think people in better places, actually, not strong, but better places, people in a position you may want to get to, actually, they're quite willing to help if you just approach them.
It's really interesting. So there's a great book I recommend called How to Be Brilliant by a guy called Michael Heppel. I first read it about 8 years ago. Really, really, really good personal development book. Now, one of the things that he talks about, in his book is, create a list of people that influence you, you admire and trust. And I've done this and did this from when I very first read the book. And I had my uncles on there and other people. My list now is probably about 30 people strong. And what I do is every 90 days I go through that list and make sure I'm making contact with those people. Now, some of those people I'm making contact in the form of I'm picking up the phone and I'm chatting to them because I can. Some of those people I'm making contact with in the form of I'm listening to their podcasts or I'm reading their books because I don't know them personally. I don't necessarily have that access. Yeah. Yeah. But what's really interesting is that even like Michael, like even yesterday he emailed me. You know, I've had him on my webinars as part of one of the things that I do. And we were chatting on the phone 2 weeks ago. And I reached out to him and I said, look, Michael, this is what I actually want to create, a Sunday Times best-selling book. And I reached out to him. He said, yeah, no problem. I'll introduce you to my publisher. I'll do this. And it's amazing when you ask people, I need your help, that are willing to do it. And so that's the one
thing. So mentors have been hugely important.
Massively.
Surrounding yourself with good people around you and people can aspire to, hugely important.
Yep. And what I'll also say is that on the mentor side of things, it isn't just about having someone that's directly training you, but being in their space. So like I say, listening to their books, watching their videos on YouTube. But any way you can learn from them in some way, it will be beneficial for sure.
Yeah, great. Something for me in the last year that I've learnt to do, and is unfollow people that don't offer any value through social media. Doesn't mean I don't like them. It just means so I use social media majority to share content, advice, help, podcasts, for example, and things like that. It's important. There's a little bit of what your business is about, because you need to add that a little bit in there, because people might inquire and want to know about that. But the big thing I've learned, and it's been very productive, is I have a bit of a rule that I will only learn, once I post something, I'll only look at the next 10 posts.
That's interesting, yeah.
Just because it breaks flow. I'm all about flow. In my day, I work out when I'm most productive. Mm-hmm. So I know the times when I get rid of the phone. We're morning people. And when I get decision fatigue, and when I get a bit of fatigue in the day, I need to change my task up, or it's family time. Personal development, and you mentioned off air, which is going to be great, will come on to up to 4 hours of learning a day. So what I found is then it makes it more productive. So by unfollowing, and that sounds a bit funny, but not consuming content that don't help me, taking it out of the equation has really helped me. Do you find value in that? Because you're talking at the moment about learning, reaching out, mentors, podcasts, reading. Mm. But you've got to also be careful of not consuming the bad content, the bad stuff. So how do you do that?
Do you know, that's a really good question. Obviously, we've got a capacity, and we've got a capacity to focus and focus our attention. And I think what's really interesting, you said you make a conscious effort to not look at the next 10 posts. All of our time fits into four dimensions. We have the zone of fulfillment, which is where we do things that aren't necessarily, well, they aren't urgent, but they are important. We have then the dimension of demand, which is things that are really urgent and really important. We then have the dimension of delusion, which are things that are urgent but not important. And then we have the dimension of distraction, which are things that are not important and not urgent. All of us will spend time in all four of those zones. The difference is the percentage of time that we spend in those zones. I will watch YouTube videos and the stupid videos that go around on Facebook, because for me, it breaks up my day. It's something to make me laugh. It's something to watch. But I'm choosing to do a small percentage of my time doing that. I'm really funny about time and being effective and efficient with my time. And for me, it's not so much.
But that's a self-disciplined guy. For the people that aren't self-disciplined, they need to obviously be wary of what they're having. So self-awareness, I always think, is really important. Being aware of where maybe you're spending the time. So that if we're thinking practical, for people listening, because obviously, like I say, where you're at now, you're in a zone with what you're doing, and you're pretty routine probably in your talk habits. But people listening, it's maybe analysing where you're currently at,
100%.
Maybe where you're spending your time.
Yep.
And then from that, right, start analysing, is that impacting professionally, personally, whatever you need to do?
One of the exercises that I get my clients to do, so I've got an online course, and it's part of my Unlock Your Potential. It's one of the modules in Unlock Your Potential, which is my 2-day sort of intensive, is called Master Your Time. I don't believe in time management. You cannot manage time. The only thing you can do is manage priorities. There are 5 levels of action. The first level of action is awareness. Yeah, so like you said, so we need to become aware. We need to know where we are now so that we can work out where we need to know where we are. We need to know where we want to get to, we want to know where we want to get to, but in order to create a route to get there, we need to know where we are. So I say this to people a lot of the time. A lot of the reason why people fail to achieve their goals is because of the way that they're doing their process. And I blame sat-navs for that. So you think, right, you get your TomTom out in your car, you just put in the postcode and press go. Yeah, and that's what we think. Right, we'll focus on the destination, we're going to get there. But what the sat-nav does when you turn it on is it works out exactly where you are, and then you put the postcode in, but you because the sat nav's done the first part automatically, you don't think about that. So by working out where we are, working out where we want to get to, we can create that trajectory. And whether it's any change you want to do, we need to check in. If, like, for example, from a fitness perspective, if you say, right, I want to be able to bench press X, Y, and Z, well, you know, what can you do now? If you want to get to X weight, well, what weight are you at now? You know, all of those elements, it's being able to have some sort of reference.
Yeah, point. So have you got any, like, practical things that maybe do? So let's say in terms of doing that, because let's say you've got, so first of all, understanding your why, yeah? You need real purpose to it. I think if you can really get to why, what you want to achieve with a personal professional goals, you've got a real purpose, a real why, and a real passion for that. That's a good start point. But then from that, how are you getting that? Because, like, people don't have a TomTom sat nav that gets them to the right way.
So I talk about creating a North
There's
Star.
There's a process, yeah.
Yeah, so I talk about having a North Star, and for me, the North Star is the ultimate goal. Like, what does life look like ultimately? Personally, professionally, financially, and all what I call the eight key areas of life. So health and fitness, family, social, life, relationships, attitude, career, financial, and any sort of personal growth bucket list style stuff you want to do. Then once we know that, we can reverse engineer that. So what does 10 years look like? What does 5 years look like? What does 3 years look like? What does 1 year look like? What does 90 days look like? What does 30 days look like? What does the next 2 weeks look like? What do I need to be doing this week? What do I need to be doing today? What's the very next task I need to do? So we create this trajectory of actions, because most people overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in 10. So by us taking a bigger, or zooming out and having a bigger perspective, we can create a bigger future for ourselves. But the thing that most people get caught up is, well, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how I'm going to get started, right? And then they have this big vision, but they give up on it because they can never see a way of doing it. Whereas when you reverse engineer it, you can find that way. Now, I learned that by accident. And the way that I learned that by accident, so I said to you already, I've got this vision, I want to become the world's best life coach. I remember going home from this Tony Robbins event, and if any of you are watching or listening and you've been to a Tony Robbins event, you know that you leave that place like feeling $1 million. You feel larger than life, you feel incredible. And I went home and I sat my family down and I said, guys, this is what I've learned, and I'm going to become the world's best life coach, and this is going to be great. And I went home, and that next day I registered a company online. And then I went to the bank and I set up a bank account. And then I said, I'm going to do this when I'm successful. Right? And for 2 years, I did next to nothing about it. And then what actually happened was I did leave London and I set up a renewable energy business. And we grew really quick. We went from a standing start to 85 staff in 4 months. Growing, growing, growing. Within 18 months, we're just about to turn over £1 million a month. And then government changed legislation. It wipes that business out. And it was a real tough time, and I ended up going on a holiday with my ex-partner at the time, and and this is the other thing, I'm a big believer in synchronicity, right? And everything, life happens for you, not to you. A real short explanation of what happened. Basically, she was a dental nurse. I went to see her colleague, who's a hygienist, who clipped my gum got infected. Now, I've been playing rugby since I was 4 years old. We're rugby players, big drinkers, yeah? I've gone on this holiday, haven't been on a relaxing holiday for years. We paid like premium flights, premium spirits at the place. I can't drink alcohol, so I'm a bit like, whatever. We go out this night out to a place called Coco Bongos in Mexico. She gets hammered till 5 in the morning. I have to carry her home. I wake up the next day, she's throwing up. She's like, I'm not going in the sun today. I said, well, I'm going in the sun today. And I had another Rhonda Byrne book, who's the same author as The Secret, called The Hero. And it spoke about a guy called Mastin Kipp and basically how his career got going. And the way his career got going was, he used to post motivational quotes on Twitter every day. And one day he got retweeted by Kim Kardashian, who went from 1,000 followers to 10,000 followers overnight. And that was something that propelled his career. And again, I was burst out crying. It was like my second lightning moment. It was like one of those moments where it's almost like you see the films where like the clouds part, the sun comes down and whatever. It was like one of those types of situations. And I realized all I need to do, if I want to empower people, I can just post a quote on social media. I don't have to be successful for this to start. So I did exactly that. I went home, I posted a quote a day on social media. A week after, I was like, Will, you idiot. What were you thinking? Some people don't go on social media in the morning, they go on in the afternoon. So you need to do two a day. A week after that, I wrote, made my own website using whatever the free service was. Week after that, on the 1st of October, 4 years ago, I posted my first blog. 3 months after that, I had a 10,000 strong social media following, and it sort of built and grew and developed from there. And the reason I share that is because for me, like we do a lot as a company now, and we do quite a number of different things, but it started with a quote. Now, back then, I didn't reverse engineer it. I just like watched, because I was blessed with that inspiration from reading that book. But now I say to people, if you reverse engineer it, you'll be able to reverse engineer it to such a granular level that the tiniest thing is a start. And once you start, you can build momentum. Momentum is just forward moving energy. So we can build on that and grow.
And it's just about getting going. I say this all the time, you know, it's like, just get started, just take action, because without action, nothing happens. Nothing, it's all irrelevant. You can have all the knowledge in the world, read all the books. So I'm just thinking practically, you can read all the books in the world, you can do all the learning, you can have all the work effort, you can have good mentors around you. But unless there's some practical goals, long, short-term goals, actions, targets, things you're doing, you don't get there. So it's like, have this stuff. And you're talking really practical here, you know? It's like you're taking action and moving yourself forward, you know? Something which I talk about with clients in the gym, and something which for myself and the way we do it is have a goal in mind, and then in a daily basis, so for me, I will always get I set myself 3 targets in a day, yeah? But there might be a list of 50 things I need to do. But my 3 targets are relevant to the goals I've set myself for that, say, quarter, 13-week period. Yeah. So if nothing else happens, I've done one more thing towards my goal in that 13-week. Because like you say, life's not perfect. You say about, I love the analogy of, it's not about time management. It's about how you utilise what you're doing, your tasks, or where you're spending your time, yeah? We've got 24 hours in a day. So I find by actually doing something relevant to your goals in the day, along the other things, it just nudges you forward.
Yeah.
And it's just taking action. And I think it's such an important message, you know, you saying that, Will, you know?
Without a doubt.
So it's cool. What I'd like to ask, so we've spoke about action and stuff, like daily habits, like daily routine, morning, evening routine. I'd love to know how they look. You've got a huge emphasis for you on self-development and learning. So it'd be great if you could mention that as well.
Yeah, so I'm a massive advocate for morning routines. I believe if you win your morning, you win your day. I'm not one to, like, I personally like to wake up early, right? My preference, we were just chatting before we kicked off the podcast about one of the things that's impacting me being able to get up early and be effective at the moment. And the thing for me is I love starting my day. I truly believe if you start your day well, you win your day. So my morning routine consists of, I meditate. One of the first things I do, I'll meditate. I write 10 things I'm grateful for, and I feel that gratitude. I will feel grateful for the day ahead, so I'll run the day as it's expected to go and say thank you for all of the things that I'm expecting to happen before it's even happened. I read something called a personal declaration, which is a form of affirmations. At the moment, I read one page of something called the Daily Stoic. I'm quite into Stoicism. And then I read my own 10 affirmations. That different to my personal declaration. So like, this is what I call my full morning routine.
So how's that making you feel after all those things you've done before you started, you know, getting to work?
I feel in control. I feel like I've got a head start. So again, in my ideal day, I'll wake up at 5, I'll do these things, which can take me anywhere from sort of 45 minutes or so, sometimes before I'm then doing, then I might go and go to the gym and train and exercise. So yeah, there are a few of those bits. A few other little bits I do as part of my morning routine is I take certain vitamins and stuff. So I take wheatgrass, I take Floridix, I take vitamin C, I take omega oils, I take...
And you find it really helps you, taking the supplements, it helps you?
Yeah, because it's a preventative measure. Like I'm a big believer in treat the cause, not the symptom. And a lot of the time, in order to treat the cause, we have to put preventative measures in place. Yeah. So I do those sort of things. So they're part of my morning routine. and then setting my I call it a must-do list. So you said about your three things, I talk about a Schmid is seven things I must do today. So I will have seven, and I have a particular structure, a very practical way of ensuring that we have structure to our priorities.
So just ask you then, so seven things, how do you ensure seven things get done?
Great question. And I need to caveat this with seven things works for me based on my typical working day. So my typical working day will be 3 to 4 hours of meetings or coaching sessions, which allows me 3 to 4 hours of doing other work-related things. Now, some days, like the day yesterday, where I was back-to-back for almost 12 hours, so there was no way I was ever going to do seven things. I might have had one thing on my list that day, which was the number one priority that I needed to get done in between those things. But the way that I do it is that I create time. So I talk about block time and schedule time. So for me, coming to meet you today was a scheduled time task. Typically a scheduled time task is something that involves somebody else. If I need to be somewhere or be on a phone or whatever, it's a scheduled time task. A block time task might be, right, I know on average I spend 30 minutes a day doing emails. Well, it doesn't matter whether I do emails at 5 o'clock in the morning, whether I do them at 10 o'clock at night, or whether I do them at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. As long as I've allocated 30 minutes of time.
And that's it, and that's your one time, you're blocking it out.
And I'm blocking it out. So in my I use an iPhone diary. I literally have two colors. Block time is brown, scheduled time is red. And if, let's say today I was going to be doing, I don't know, emails from 9 till 10 or whatever, then you said, right, can we meet 9 till 10? I'll say, yeah, no problem. And I'll just have to move my block time task of emails to later in the day.
Cool. So this is great. And I think there's some really good take-home points here, which is amazing. Let's say they just don't go to plan, right?
Yep.
The morning, I don't know, overslept the alarm, you had a late night hockey finish Thursday night, I don't know, you wake up,
yep,
you haven't had your gratitude, you had an appointment, you missed that, things just didn't happen.
Yep.
How do you stay on top of that day? How do you then not let day affect you? How do you then make sure things get done and do that?
That's a great question. So for me, it just comes back down to prioritising. So for me, if that happens, I can find myself getting really overwhelmed. And what then I have to do is go back to what is the priority. Hence why I talk about a must-do list, right? What is the priority? What is it that I need to be doing? And then I go back to focus on that and that alone, which enables me to progress and move forward. And as long as I've done something, I started at the beginning of the year talking about having no zero days. So for me, a zero day is if I've done absolutely nothing to progress me as a person, professionally or personally. So by having those zero days, even if I've done something, I know I've made some progress.
So it's almost like expectations. Are we right on film battery? Cool. Yeah. So managing expectations a little bit is having expectations, outlining that you. Accepting almost that these things won't happen, but in your mind, as long as you get something done, that's a win for you in the day.
Yeah, but you made a really good point. You said that you picked three things that are gonna get you closer to what your main goal is for that quarter. And that's a really important thing, because not all tasks are the same. They're weighted differently. So from a fulfillment perspective, if your number one priority for that particular month, for whatever reason, is, working on your relationship, let's say, then having that bit of quality time with your partner, that one task, doing that one thing, has more impact and more fulfillment for you than maybe doing 10 work-related tasks. So it's identifying, well, what is my number one priority? Which comes back to the, I call it an all-star trajectory, 10-year, 5-year, 3-year, 1-year, 90-day, 30-day goals. What is the number one priority? And knowing that, have you given everything to that? So when I set my yearly goals, I asterisk one. So I set lots of goals. Per hockey, like recreational sport goals, fitness goals, work goals, whatever, but what's my number one priority for that year or that quarter? And that is the thing that I'm honed in on. That's the reason why I say no to other things, because that has to become a priority.
But that becomes, I think that's great discipline that shows, because we can get in the court thing, I'll do yes, yes, yes to do stuff, but actually sometimes less is more. Yeah. Doing less can help you do more on the important things to you.
I've learned this the hard way. I've really learned this the hard way.
But isn't that normally the way you learn the hard way?
Right, 100%. In that, but again, think about it logically.
When things are too easy, is it really, you know? Yeah.
There's a really great book called Essentialism, which I recommend anybody to read, particularly if you're a business owner.
And yeah, I'm going to add all these books in the notes, mate.
Yeah, sure.
Some great books.
But if you take a light bulb, right? If you imagine a normal light bulb, that light bulb spreads energy out, yeah, everywhere from all angles, that light bulb. Whereas if you take a laser pen and you shine a laser pen will go, it's still light, and that light will go so much further. Why? It's because it's focused and it's all going in one direction, whereas a light bulb's energy is dissipating everywhere. And when I talk a lot of, I'm a real advocate for structure, I'm a real process driven guy, and one of the things I do with a lot of my clients from all different walks of life, everything from, like I say, CEOs to aspiring business owners and everything in between, is like what structure we need to create. And one of those really important pieces of that structure is introducing self-love. Right, and when I talk about self-love is the things that you love doing, schedule them in. The things you love doing with other people, schedule them in. Because sometimes, if we don't prioritise those things, then we just feel like we're on the hamster wheel of life and we're not actually taking any time for us.
Like, yeah, I think it's really important. From a productivity perspective, and something that's helped me is, in the day we get... decision fatigue. You know, I have to make a lot of decisions and stuff like that. So, and actually, right, I want to ask you, how long, you know, this in the morning, because we're leading to my point, how long is your, you know, yourself, you know, your self-gratitude, you're reading your affirmations, you're reading and all of the bits you do in meditation, how long does that take you? And so, writing out your seven to-do list.
So I'll come to that in a minute as well. I talk about having a full morning routine and a short morning routine. So my short morning routine is that, like days like today, I was explaining before we come on the camera, I got in from ice hockey last night at 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't get off the ice till midnight. Got in at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was a 14 hour day. So for me, getting up super early this morning, I've got, a family function this evening as soon as I leave work. It's my mum's birthday today, and then I'm playing ice hockey tomorrow, but I've got a meeting on the other side of London in the morning, and I've got ice hockey again Sunday, so I've got very limited time. So for me, getting up that hour earlier, I would have rather had that hour in bed, because I know I function best with 7 hours sleep. I'm aware of that. And so for me, getting up that hour early to do my morning routine wasn't going to serve me today. So I have my short morning routine. My short morning routine is basically I meditate, I read the Daily Stoic, and I do my affirmations. They're like my non-negotiable. Yeah.
So what I want to ask you about is, so the short routine, I get that, and it's really good to have some flexibility in the day because life's not perfect. I think people realise that it's not perfect. It won't always go smoothly. I think you can overcome the obstacles a little bit easier. Your long routine, if it goes to, how long is that long
about
routine?
About 45 minutes, and then I'll leave it. So if I talk about exercising, like so I say, I've got lots of things. So I have my about 40 minutes beforehand.
Yeah.
There or thereabouts, if I'm doing everything, then I'll go and exercise. Then, I mean, one of my morning routine things is I'll have a cold shower, then I'll have the vitamin. So for me, from waking up to doing everything I need to do, including going to the gym, showering, the whole shebang, is about an hour, about 2 hours.
Great. So this is my point. I'm going back to the point. I think this is really relevant. So 2 hours, someone's going to go, I ain't got 2 hours.
Yeah.
However, and this is what I've learned through, like we say, mistakes and how it works. And the advice is, 2 hours, people think, I've got to work. No, God, I need to do 2 hours. 2 hours of self-development, personal things for you. If your working day is 8 hours and it leaves you with six, just a bit, it's going to make your 6 hours, I'm sure, so much more productive than trying to flog eight without the self-personal development.
Yeah, I massively would believe you say? That. Yeah, I mean, there's a famous quote, Abraham Lincoln is quoted saying, which is, if you give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first four sharpening the axe. And that's what I think we're really doing, is we're priming ourselves to be in the best possible position to go and do those things. It's not about the hours you work, it's the work you do in the hours,
100%,
right?
100%,
so, 100%. The more productive 100%. You are in those, doing the work you're doing, then that's
And I have to offer this advice slightly against my thought process. So, yes, I've learned, because I love my job, so I love working. So, me going home, I read at night, it's a fitness business, whatever book it may be, so I can do that. So I'm probably, my work life balance is a little bit out of shift, maybe, but I love what I do, or you know, whatever.
Can we just touch on that really quickly?
Yes, please do.
Work life balance is it's a myth, right? Because if you do what you love,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Okay, you'll be in balance. But it's other people's perception of what about. So people's perception of a work-life balance is do 9 to 5 and then you go and you socialise and you do whatever. For me, I will quite happily work 18 hours a day. And for me, that is balance, right?
Yeah, I get it. It's great advice.
Because that's where I'm at. It's other people's perception of what work-life balance is or you not choosing to do what you want to do. Now, the other thing is combining those things. It's a piece of, oh, you don't socialise. No, I don't socialise in the way you want to socialise. You want to go out and get drunk and do whatever on the weekend, that's cool, that's up to you. But my socialising could be going to one of my events and networking or speaking to my clients. That's my form of socialising, not my clients and my friends. So,
it's cool, man. It's great. I'm really glad you say it and to say that. And I think it's what, it goes back to what's important to you and what works for you and stuff like that. So the point I was making around there, so yeah, for me, I love what I do. So yeah, hours, learning, development is not a chore. I love it. It's a passion. So I'm saying that. And then on one hand, I'm saying do less to make you more productive. So I don't want to be contradictory, but that's me. But relevant, not everyone's in that thinking like that. I still know that actually train an hour a day, spend time on my journal. So writing out my journal, writing out this list, it might be 30 minutes of extra time, but that prep, that organisation, that setting me up personally, it gives me more productive time in the hours I'm going to commit to work. And that's the point I suppose I'm trying to make to people that might not enjoy the job, want to do that actually. And you're hearing you talk about 2 hours of self-development and that. Anyone listening, just try it, do that. Try and commit some time for you and watch the productivity soar for the hours you're working. So I think, you know, you saying that, and I just want to reinforce that point and how it's, I've had to get better at doing that myself. It makes me more productive, sharpening the saw, as they say. You know, I really believe it and stuff. And, you know, so yeah, that's great. Something else, though, which is obviously important. You spoke about sort of daily habits, more routine. Your evening routine, I just want to touch on evening routine, because where you're so strong in the morning, how would an evening work for you?
You know, I don't really have an evening routine. I'm really blessed that I can literally walk in. I use an app called Sleep Cycle, so I monitor my sleep.
Too,
And I fall asleep in 2 minutes. Like, and I'll fall into a, you watch from where I am, you see my sleep, I'll fall off a cliff. Like, I'm down to my deep sleep within 2 minutes. And so I don't have to do, so some people have to read of an evening, they have to do this, but my diary is so varied. Like even this week, for example, what did I do Monday night? I think Monday night was, Tuesday night I have ice hockey, I didn't get in till 11:45, and I was up early Wednesday morning. Wednesday we had an event over in Kent, I got home about midnight. Last night I got in from ice hockey training. So for me to have an evening routine, I don't have a stereotypical working day of I finish work at 5 or 6, I get home, I chill out, relaxing of an evening. Like I'm on the go, not all the time, a lot of the time, but that's my choice.
Yeah.
And so I don't have that as an evening routine. The things I have done in the past, like I listen to affirmations to fall asleep to, I've done that. But yeah, it's
cool. And not everyone needs it. And actually, people who are night owls might have a better evening routine than a morning routine, but it's really important. But the value, I think, of talking about this morning routine and setting yourself up to win for the day is really important, because you can't win a day at the end of the day. I think the morning.
Yeah, the great thing about the morning, again, like I say, I'm not one to say you've got to be part of the 5 a.m. club. And I know there's a lot of people that preach 5 a.m. club. I think it depends on what it is that you do. I do believe what you've just said there. You can't win your day at the end of the day, though. So if you do all this stuff before the day, you will find you're in gear. Like, I've always been a morning person, so I was in gear 5 when most people were turning up to work. Like, most companies I've ever worked at, I've always been in an hour before. Even when I used to work in London, I would be in the office sometimes at 6:15 in the morning, when other people were turning up at 8:15, you know, and that enabled me to just set my day up, and I would be in gear 5 when other people are just getting out of gear 2. So
yeah, it's cool, mate. It's really good. Mate, some other stuff. And this is fascinating. I want to talk about just around your mindset, because I think that mindset is so relevant to just life. Yeah? You're having a mindset focus. So how would you, someone like yourself, you know, bad things happen, negative things don't go right. How does Will overcome the challenges and the things that don't go right from a mindset perspective?
Okay, great question. Look, like I said earlier, like, this year's been one of the toughest years I've ever had. I've had to learn more about myself this year than I've ever learned about myself.
And can I add, I'm going to add then, mate, on this. And this, I think it's really anyone listening and stuff. Again, you've shown real humility today. And I think that's a great thing. Thank in you. Terms of your honesty around some of the struggles. We're connected on LinkedIn and stuff. And I'm going to tell people how to find you. I'm going to want to find you listening to it that don't know you and stuff. You're still so positive. You share content all the time on LinkedIn and your social platforms. You're positive, you're energy, and you want to help through a tough year you're having. So I tip my hat to you, mate. And also, I think anyone listening is like, look, that's such a great thing to learn. There's someone doing it that's having a tough time as well.
Yeah, I think...
Sorry, mate, cut across. No, I know you're saying a point. It's quite relevant to that.
Yeah, so you said, so what So what was your question again? Sorry
mate. Yeah, so break your flow there. Just what you do to overcome challenges, and what your mindset's so strong, challenges or failures or things not working for you, how does Will overcome them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the really important parts is gratitude, right? So like I say, most days I'll write 10 things I'm grateful for, and I'll do that, and I'll feel that.
You said you visualize it as well.
I'll write it down. Well, this is the thing, right? There's a difference between feeling gratitude and writing gratitude. So the reason why we write it is it enables us to focus it. But gratitude is a frequency, right? It's a vibrational frequency that we can get to, and gratitude, we can access that via focus, right? Because where focus goes, energy flows. So by starting to focus on the things that we're grateful for, because in any given moment, there's things to be grateful for. I know it's sort of a little bit of a cliche, but like, everybody that's watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, we're living a privileged life, right? And we forget these things. We've all been in scenarios where you wake up one morning, the hot water's not working, the shower's freezing. Well, we've never been grateful for the hot water every day. Or even the fact that you go to the toilet and you flush the toilet and the toilet gets blocked. It's like, oh, for God's sake, and like once in every 6 months the toilet's blocked, or the toilet flush doesn't work, whatever. But for those 3-4 times a day you flush the toilet, you've never thought of being grateful for it. It's just little things like that that you can focus on to just start to shift your thinking. So that's one of the things.
So when you're grateful for things, you less room to be stressed over other stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely that. The other thing is that this goes against. I have to pre-frame it a little bit. There's no good or bad. There's no right or wrong. Everything's on a spectrum. Yeah, and it's all a matter of perspective. So, and this is what's been the biggest learning for me this year is I talk a lot about the Jungian process, right? So personal development for me, if you asked me 4 years ago on a scale of 1 to 10, how much you know about personal development, I would have told you 8 out of 10. You ask me now, I'll tell you 2 out of 10. But most people think I know more about personal development than almost anybody they know. I would still say 2 out of 10, because now I'm not ignorant to the fact that there is so much out there that I'm just unconscious of that I don't know.
Is this making you, though, in your work? Is this making you better? The fact that you're at 2 out of 10 now and you're always learning, because you're always learning, you're offering more value to your clients.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do. And so the way I was coming to with that concept is that what I think is bad and what I think isn't good and what I think is a problem, and again, I have to have this battle myself and I have to work hard to do it, is realizing the blessing. Because everything that happens in life is a lesson or a blessing. If you were to plot a chart with sort of an XY axis of your positive moments in life and your negative moments, and you were to plot that chart across your age, so it ends up looking like some sort of heart rate ECG monitor, like ups and downs across that chart, you'll notice that your lowest lows are directly correlated to your highest highs. You know, for me at 11 years old, witnessing my dad and all the rest of it, the direct correlation to that now, 20 years later, is that I get to have the pleasure and the fulfillment of working with people in a variety of different capacities, whether it's in this sort of form of people that I may never even meet, listening to the podcast, to my one-on-one clients I'm seeing this afternoon, to people the other night that I was at events with, like whatever that is, I have the privilege of doing that, and that's come out of that negative, wrong moment. So that's the thing that I have to remind myself. Yeah. Give people some practical advice. So the gratitude element of it, it's understanding that life happens for you, not to you. It's you've got the choice of living in fear or having faith, and it can be hard sometimes. Like, there's been moments where I'm like, I can't see this is working, I can't see how this is going to move forward, I can't find my way out of it. But there's a quote that I literally have printed on my desk, and that there's no such thing as lack of resources, just a lack of resourcefulness. Like, there's a way. You might not know the way. The amount of my clients that I sit down with on a day-to-day basis, and they're like, they can't see the way, but I know the way, and instantly, boom, 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 and they're out of it because I'm aware of it. Now, I just keep faith in that there's someone out there that knows the answer, because any problem that you have is simply an unasked or unanswered question.
Love that. That's really cool, mate. Really good. What advice would you give to Will 10 years ago?
Oh, wow.
And when I ask this, I'm sure this is, you know, you're going to give this Will some advice. What you know now?
What advice would I give Will of 10 years ago? I would say, do the things you're scared of quicker.
Yeah. I have a theory. So obviously football being my background, played football. When I got nervous over things, it was obviously the game was important. So I always say, when I feel, if you're in a situation where you're nervous and worried and thinking about it, that anxiety a little bit or whatever it is, I used it to my advantage. Early days of football playing, I got anxious and not played very well. I used it. So I always think, if you're doing something that scares you, or you're out of your comfort zone, you're anxious or whatever, you're doing something of worthwhile. So, you know, you saying that, attack those things that scare you is really good. And the lessons you learned from overcoming fear, things you may have feared, is quite big as well.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. It's the best bit of advice that I've been given by anybody is understanding the power of releasing emotion, right? So, for example, there's another book, by Dr. David Hawkins, called Power versus Force. He talks about the map of consciousness, and the lowest form of energy is guilt and shame, and it's understanding how to dissolve those emotions, and understanding that whole philosophy is probably one of the best bits of advice.
Yeah, that's cool. What advice would you give to someone then starting out in business, or even in your industry?
Any business whatsoever, or my industry, particularly my industry, start with who. Who are you serving? Your business will become, I mean, you hear people say different things. Business is hard, business is easy, business is this, business is that. The reality is, the purpose of business is to be profitable. Yeah, it might not be the mission of the business, but the purpose of business is to be profitable. The mission of the business is to serve X, Y, Z and do whatever, but the purpose of a business is to be profitable. And that can be done so much quicker by getting really clear on who it is you're serving. And the broader you are, the harder it will be to start. And I've learned that the harder way, which has taught me so many lessons, but
So become an expert in your area.
Yeah.
Or diversify your skills. What would you pick?
Become an expert. So there's, if you think of the medical industry, for example, right? GPs, yeah, great at what they do. They're general practitioners. They've got broad knowledge of everything, right? But we don't want to go and see GPs when we've got a niche problem. We want to go and see the specialist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Because they're the expert. What's the benefit of going and seeing the expert? Well, you're going to get a better result from the expert than you are the GP, typically. What's the benefit to the GP? Well, they get to work on what it is that they love doing. If it's they're obsessed with knees or brains or ankles or whatever it is that is their real passion and whatever, then they get to spend more time on that rather than having to have this broad knowledge that can become overwhelming because they have to learn a little bit about everything. So that is one of the things without a doubt. And then obviously the flip side to that, from a remuneration point of view, if you're going to go and see a knee specialist, typically they're being remunerated better than
of course
than a GP as well, right? So
of course, you've talked about exercise, really important to you. Not every guest I've had on actually does exercise. I say it's brain, brawn, and business. So the common denominator has been business.
Yeah.
And brain, brawn's great to have if it's all free. Fitness is important to you. You exercise. What does it do to you? So what type of training do you do, and what does it do to your sort of productivity and your performance?
Yeah, great question.
How you value it?
I massively value it. I've played rugby since I was 4 years old. I've played ice hockey since I was 8 years old. I still play ice hockey competitively now. And I do a lot of CrossFit style exercise. But if I'm completely honest with you, the exercise that I get the most value out of is running. I don't do enough of it.
So if you go and run, will you listen to anything?
I don't listen to audio. I listen to music.
I
love running in the outdoors. Where I live, there's a the house backs onto a river, and I go running around
the river.
Don't
stress about it. Just let it go.
And it's all cool. So I go running all around the river, and I just love it. I love it. For me, it's a form of meditation, right? Because meditation. All meditation is really about is focus, yeah? And, depending on the different types of meditation, but anyway, typically we talk about focus meditation, and for me, I get to focus, and my head runs at a million miles an hour.
Yeah, me too,
I've got a million miles going on, and for me, going running just enables me to get that mental clarity, and I get to not think for a little while.
Yeah.
I'm not one anymore that does the... I'm not that bothered about. I like to keep fit aesthetically. Yeah, I want to look in a perfect. I'm not bothered about being in perfect shape, but I want to sort of aesthetically sort of look fit. But for me, it's more about functional fitness.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Yeah, no, it's cool, mate. It's really cool. Will, it's been absolutely amazing catch up with you, buddy, in chat. I know people listening are thinking, yeah, cool guys. I said at the start, cool guys. So insightful to talk to you. So tell me. Some of the things you've got going on, I know you do, you've got your networking events you host, you've got other seminar training days, little things. Can you just share some of the stuff you're doing now, what you've got coming up?
Without a doubt. Like I say, we do quite a lot as an organisation, so we sort of break it into four growth zones, which are sort of divisions, if you like. So we run something called the Evolve Network, which are a personal development network events that run in six cities around the UK. So Chelmsford, Maidstone, Leeds, Manchester, Sheffield and Newcastle, every month there's an event. Going on there, which is free to attend your first event. We have two guest speakers at every event, anywhere between 30 and 60 people per event. They're really great places to be around positive, driven, like-minded people. We have my signature event, which is called Unlock Your Potential, which is a two-day intensive where we cover everything from creating your vision, dissolving fear, overcoming limiting beliefs, time mastery, selecting strategies for success, and a whole host of other different things. It's a really, really powerful 2 days.
And relevant for anyone.
Relevant for anyone, yeah. It's basically about it's teaching you a thought process and practical steps to remove limitations so you can achieve what it is that you really, truly want to achieve in life. So that's what that's about. Then I have an online membership with loads of online resources, a lot of that content, but just in video form, and sort of an accountability group. I run a business owner mastermind for business owners that turn over between 500k and 5 million quid a year, do one-on-one coaching, group coaching. We've got an NLP training school. There's a fair bit that we've
got. Great stuff, mate. Where can people find you?
So the best way, two ways to connect. Again, oh, I said two ways, a few ways to connect. So on social media, so on Instagram, for example, Will Polston, which is P-O-L-S-T-O-N. My Facebook group, if you're on Facebook, we've got a Facebook group with about over 4,000 people in it called the Make It Happen Community. You can join us there. There's loads of content being posted, or online at make-it-happen.co.uk.
Brilliant. Mate, thanks so much for coming on. And I think for anyone listening, you've covered, there's been so many, some sincere knowledge bombs dropped, buddy. And from my perspective, thanks for giving up your time today coming on. And it's great to hear, the stuff you've done, the stuff you've got going on. And if anyone's listening to this, I suggest you literally find this guy, connect with him, and get to one of his events, because I think you're going to catch some good stuff.
Thank you very much,
mate. Cheers, Will.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. If you enjoyed the episode, then please share it with anyone else you think that might get value. And if you can leave us a 5-star review, that would be great. It will just help us to reach more people with a podcast. If you want to get the episodes as soon as they're released, then just subscribe to the podcast. And as soon as they get released, you'll get a notification on the podcast platform you use. Once again, thanks to everyone for listening. And if you want to get in touch with me at any time, then just drop me a message on LinkedIn, Oliver Berquez. Be great to connect and have a chat with you.